Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Raw Knuckles Podcast. Please like, follow, and subscribe.
Probably half the people have us out now.
Yeah.
And so that, and some of it's based on, it, did he?
Tim does.
Don't watch our season preview. Don't watch our season preview. I didn't say anything bad.
Wow,
said they got a different.
He didn't say nothing bad. But just take this for a second. He has St. Louis in.
No, Dave Knox told me to argue with them and make up shit, and so I just started going crazy and said shit. You don't, yeah. So,
Carson, all right. Be nice to
back to the question.
Nyland going ballistic. He's a freaking madman.
I'm Chris Nyland, and this is the Raw Knuckles Podcast. Welcome. Welcome to the Raw Knuckles Podcast. My partner, Tim Stapleton, here.
Tim Stapleton. is this former Green Bay gambler,
yeah,
Tim
it is.
Stapleton?
Yeah, it is. I was gonna ask you, did you go to any Packer games?
Oh my god, I went all the time.
I know, it's crazy
it was,
there, huh?
God, you're a legend over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was so we just had our home opener last night, and I went down to go talk to Ryan McDonough. And so there was a guy with his back to me, and I'm like, all right, I had my son with me, and I couldn't really wait around. I'd go to media. So anyway, I just kind of was like, I'll go be rude and walk up. And it was Mark Kosicki.
Oh, Oz, yeah. How's he
I
doing?
I know, it's crazy. would he have coached you?
Oh, yeah, 2 years. That guy was, yeah, he was something. He was good. Yeah. He was good. He was a little old school. Yeah. Did you like Green Bay? Did you like it?
I loved it.
Yeah.
My son was born there. I was there 2 years. Honestly, I thought I wasn't leaving. So when we went there, we kind of changed it around. We won the Anderson Cup the first year, which was like the regular season trophy. And then ironically lost to my assistant coach, Jeff Blashill, in the semifinals. And then the next year we beat Coach Blashill in the semifinals, won the Clark Cup. And they gave me a new deal and gave me a membership to the Green Bay Country Club. And I'm like, I'm living here forever.
Yeah, I don't think so.
And then Julian Breeswalk called 2 weeks later.
Yeah, I don't think so. And I was going to say that, you know, listen, you coach at every level, you know, championship in high school that you started coaching high school at 33 years old. You won all three tiers of junior hockey.
Thanks for throwing my age out, by the way.
Right? Yeah. In the U.S. You win a championship in the American Hockey League and then two Stanley Cup. You're in four finals Stanley Cup. How do you do it? And what's the secret? Because, listen, there's great coaches out there. Some are motivators. Some are X's and O's. Some are the players coach. What's your secret?
The secret sauce. I may have to write a book one day. And
I'll pick it up for sure.
There's a lot of things that go into, I guess, my philosophy or how I do things. I think I came along probably for my personality at the right time, because I was a blend of, like, I still truly believe hockey is a sport of intimidation. I do think the teams that are bigger, stronger, and meaner, pretty much they end up winning. And the teams that we've won with at all the levels I've been with, we were the biggest, strongest, and the meanest. And not, I can't sit here and say we were always the most skilled. You do need to have, I believe, high-end players. But I still think the recipe is the same. And when I started coming up, I think there was probably starting to be that transition of like the dictator coach versus the coach that I hate saying players coach, because I still can't even define what a player's coach is. What do you like? I always say, like, is player's coach do what the player tells you? You know, that's not what a player's, but like kind of relates to the players. And maybe I came up at the right time. Maybe that was something I was maybe at a gift to relate to them. I don't know, but that has helped me in my career. And then, I mean, there's a whole slew of things that I've done in my career to help myself, but a podcast is way too short to go through that.
Well, you know, listen, I never met you. And I came back to Montreal when you were coaching at Syracuse. And I had never met you. And I was at the game when Jeffrey Young got hurt. I was at that game. Anyway, I mean, who's this John Cooper guy? And then I'm in the radio for years here. And I followed, you know, certainly Tampa. The Habs beat them in the playoffs that one, you know, in the early years of your coaching career. And
2015 got swept. Loudest I ever heard in that building was when, who was it, Bork? Scored 11 seconds into the faceoff in game
Rene
3.
Rene Bork.
Yeah. Of all painful, people.
Painful memories.
And he didn't do anything the rest of the series.
Well, he didn't need to. Yeah. He'd already won.
Yeah, well, I mean, before that, he did nothing. He did nothing. But I saw your interviews and I heard you talk and I watched your bench demeanor and I'm there. I like this guy. And you come to town. And I certainly followed the record and all that. And on the radio, when Tampa was coming to town, I'd say, Tampa Bay in town tonight, super duper Johnny Cooper. And when you look at super duper Johnny Cooper's record, it's incredible what you've done. And you say biggest, meanest. You're saying you are blessed with big teams, talented teams, mean teams. But what is it about you that makes you so relatable to these guys?
Oh man, that's you.
See, you were trying to squirm out of that one. I can't let you,
guys,
because I want to hear it from you. What you think? Your self analysis as a coach, like your philosophy.
Well, I truly believe I want what the players want, and I try and put myself in the shoes of the players. I never played in the NHL, so and I understand that, and so I don't put myself in a situation because I'm in whatever the pseudo power position and I can tell them what to do, then I'm going to make them do something that I wouldn't do myself. I think things through. I don't believe I'm somebody that like flies off the handle on guys. I do take a step back. I take like players, they're around us, 3 hours a day. And I do care about what happens the other 21 hours with them. And I fully understand that guys come to the rink and some one guy might be pissed off. One guy might have had a fight with his girlfriend. One guy's dog might be sick, you know, and you try and relate to them in all of those situations. And, you know, like I am a believer though. Like I treat, everyone fairly, like everyone's treated fairly, but I don't treat them equally. I really don't. And some guys get a little bit more than me than others in certain situations. And so, but my goal is to build a team. And I do have rules. I do have standards. And if you break them, I hold you accountable. And what I'd learned in my career is you may be upset about holding one guy accountable, but there's 22 other guys that are high-fiving you on the way out. And when you get over that hurdle, and all of this has to be done with a respect factor. I never embarrass guys. I never go to the media ever and sit here and BS what the hell's going on. Everything gets handled in-house. And I think the guys respect that. And in saying that, I think you'll rarely find a Tampa Bay player ever come out in the media and say anything bad about the organization, the coach, the player, the teammates. If they do, it's rare, and I wouldn't even know where to find it. And I think that's part of the culture I try and build, that it's all us. Everything gets handled in the room. And that's why people probably say, like, you know, Tampa's that organization that you never really find them in controversy, because everything we do is in-house. And then I think the guys respect that. I respect what they do and where they come from, how hard they work, and it kind of works together.
I think you just gave a definition of a player's coach right there, right? Because I'm like you. When I hear player's coach, I'm like, oh, like that's like an assistant coach, right? Like, yeah. No, I'm serious, you know? Yeah. Like, it's like, oh, he's a buddy-buddy, but it's like you just gave that definition of what that really means, I think. You're coaching, but you also, like, look at it from a player's side, I think. And they trust you, right? Like
they do. And huge. Do they get pissed off at me? They do, like – You know, I've sat some of our biggest stars in games.
I saw that. Was that like 2 years ago at the end of the season, wasn't it? Like last year.
Trust me, you don't want to do it. You don't like doing it, but it's a stock correction. Like they have to, you know, everybody's going to be held accountable too. And that's why those are rare situations, but at other times you have no choice. The one thing that I do love about the guys and the guys that have gone through those situations, because it's easy to sit the fourth liner. Yeah. It's easy to say, you know, but that's not what has to be. It has to be that the best players, you have to push them to their limits. You have to hold them accountable when they start to go astray and sit here and say, you know, you have rules too. And that rarely happens to our guys, but when it does, are they ticked off at me? For sure they are. But do they come out and play their ass off the next game and forever, you know, for months after that, they do. And, you know, you got to get your best players to be your best players. And I think that's why we've had success here, because our best players have like
stepped up one of us time. You said setting those standards. Can you give me an example, a few examples maybe, of what some of those standards are? Because if I'm a player, I want to know them, right? And I'm curious.
Yeah. Don't be late.
Yeah.
Don't be late.
Decade. So like when a podcast starts at 2:30 and you come on at 3, like that's the standard. No, I'm just kidding.
No. That's...
We have standards here too, Coop.
Yeah. That was showing you who the coach was. Yeah.
No. So.
Yeah, that's, that was, yeah. Yeah, that was me.
That's technology.
That was part of that was my inability to figure out how to download
Google Chrome.
Google Chrome, yeah. I can't even say it.
Get closer to the action in the Fight Club with the Raw Knuckles podcast over on Patreon. Whether you're an instigator, enforcer, or aiming for the Hall of Fame, there's something for everyone waiting for you. Don't miss your chance to be part of the ultimate hockey community. Coop, Prince George, you're dual American and Canadian, dual citizenship you hold.
Yeah,
I want to ask you.
Prince George, my mom was my mom's an American. She kept her citizenship.
So what I want to know, you go to Hofstra, and all the way from Prince George, was it the lacrosse that got you to Hofstra?
Yes, 100%. So yes, so I was going to Notre Dame in Wilcox, Saskatchewan, and playing for the Hounds, and it was first time I'd
You're
ever
playing been hockey cut. Too? Hockey and yeah. lacrosse.
And it was the first time I'd ever been cut in my life. I'll never forget, I lined up at tryouts beside Wendell Clark. Ooh. And I remember thinking, "Oh, wow." Cuz you know, you leave your city. I left Prince George. I was a pretty good player in town. I thought, "Oh, I'll go play for the Hounds. This would be awesome." Saw him in a tournament and I was that was a quick lesson in humility when I was going against these guys. But anyway, so I got all the way through grade 12, and the highest I played in the second highest team at Notre Dame was the best I got to do, and I got a two-game called up with the big boys once, which was really exciting. But I found out that, you know, I probably wasn't getting a hockey scholarship, and I just happened to be pretty decent at lacrosse. And so that's what brought me out east to Hofstra. I'd never even heard of Hofstra, and there was contact, and they, I guess, heard of me. And so we kind of set this up. I went out there, and it was great. It was a phenomenal experience for me to go out on my own. You know, I'd been at Notre Dame, but you know, you're still in under the kind of umbrella of the school, but this was a phenomenal experience. And so I played 4 years at Hofstra, and then I went on to, I was kind of a little lost after that, what I was going to do. I went to law school, I work on Wall Street for a couple of years. And during that, I was just missing the game. I always missed hockey. Was always my love. It was everything. And you know, Hofstra is right across the street from the Nassau Coliseum on Long Island. So I used to go to all the games all the time. I loved it. And so the part of my inspiration to go to law school was to become a player agent. And that's why I went.
So you get your law degree, and instead of becoming a player agent, you become a defense attorney, right? You work in the DA's office? Or what was it?
Everybody, Pat Morris, I probably know him at Newport and Donnie Mina and those guys. So I'd met Mark Guy was another guy working with them. I got to know them. And so they were kind of helping me out, seeing if I could get in the business. There was a bunch of guys in Michigan State that I was going to law school right to a school next door to Michigan State. So they were wondering, you know, like maybe I could help me nab a few of these guys. But I graduated law school. I needed a job. So I was playing men's league hockey there. And a judge, Judge Brennan he was working in a court. And I went and applied at his court and said, hey, you know, would you help me out here and make me a defense attorney? And he goes, well, basically the short version is he's like, will you coach my kid's high school hockey team? And it kind of, there was a little more to it, but that was basically the whole premise of how it happened. And so I said, well, you're damn right. So well, to be honest, it was the greatest year of coaching I'd had. It was phenomenal. The kids were great. They always make fun of them because I tell them it's the worst team I ever coached talent wise, but they were the best team I ever coached. They were so much fun. And we ended up having great success. We made it to the state eights and then I went and worked in the judges. I was his public defender for on and off. You know, you worked in 3 month increments, and it was I worked for him for a year. It was phenomenal. It was a perfect marriage. And then that's when I got the bug, and I was coaching maybe 20 hours a week and for gas money, and basically working law 60 hours a week. And I'd say 4 years later, it was the opposite. And I thought, holy cow, I got to somehow turn this into a paying profession.
So how do you do that? How do you get to that junior level? You start throwing your resume out?
You're also coaching with zero. I mean, I'm guessing like you're not thinking at that moment, like I'm going to coach and win Stanley Cups in the NHL, or was that the mindset?
Not a chance. I know, right? Thinking that in, so I go from a high school hockey team, and it was 1 year I was assistant, was the next year I was getting out of coaching. I was going to stop coaching. And basically this team in town asked me, like, they started a junior A team in the North American Hockey League. They're called the Capital Center Pride. They're like, can you help us out? I said, sure. And Kelly Miller, who played in the NHL, he was the coach. He left for Anaheim. So now they needed me, and they're like, please stay on. So I stayed on. And then I really started getting the bug. And then I went and took over a junior B team called the Metro Jets in Detroit. And we ended up winning the national championship. It was that simple. Not, it was that hard, but it was that simple. The fact that now I was really had the bug. And then I left that team and I went and coached Honeybaked, the midget major team at Honeybaked. And I had the 86 birth year, some 87s. And that team was that's when I was like, wow, this is kind of rock star hockey. Because these were all, some of these kids were going to the development program. Some of these kids, they were all going to big time Division I colleges. And then that's when I was becoming kind of connected in, you know, the junior ranks and the heavy hitter, like midget AAA. And that's when Kelly Chase.
Well, I was going to say that, like you had the bug, and it must have became a disease at some point. And I think fungus. It became a disease when you went to Texarkana. Hello.
So there was, I'm in Michigan, in Lansing, Michigan, and there was two expansion teams coming out, and one was in Traverse City, Michigan, and one was in Texarkana, Texas. And we were convinced that the group we were headed with was Mike Brooks and Tony Sansone and whole crew played by Kelly Chase and Brett Hall. He was another one in the group. And we were convinced we were getting Traverse City. And sure enough, it fell through and we were going to Texarkana. And I remember thinking, wow, what do I do here? Am I going to give up my law practice and go? And at the time I was young enough and I thought, I can't let this go. That's a perfect word. It's like a disease. Yeah. Like once you get it, it was so fulfilling for me. And it just my personality in the sense that, like I would not consider myself long-term. Like, where am I going to be in 30 years or 20 years? I just get me to next year. That's what I'm looking at. And I just loved that ability to have pick a team and then take all these different personalities, take 23 different guys and make them one. I loved it. And the challenges, the ups and downs, the despair, the exhilaration, all those things, it just was everything to me. And then the competition. I didn't realize I was as competitive as I was till I got in the fight. And I think my time away from college, when I stopped playing sports competitively, there was a little void in my life, and I got it back when I went back into coaching, or when I went into coaching.
Did parents ever almost convince you not to coach? You had to deal with the parents, right? Like, they're nuts. They're nuts.
The ones whose kids I didn't play much is the, you know, what's weird. I've got a 13-year-old son now, and he's playing down here in Tampa, and there's so much great about it, but you start, it's just, you can see like the parents and everybody has the right intentions. They're all pulling for their kid, but they're also living their life through their kid. And that's the part you have to like try and separate and be like, this is, it's the kids. And it's, and I understand when I was coaching, and there were some really good players, and I get it. I get there's competition among peers. I get it that some kids are making the national development program and kids, some kids aren't. Some kids are going to some big Division I school, and some kid is going to a Division III school. And there's that competitiveness all the way through. But, and that's hard. And that was a hard balance for me, is to be able to control the parents and let the players have fun. Because sadly, there were a lot of players that didn't have fun because of that. There were a lot of players that burned out of the game because of, I think they felt the pressure above, and it just became no fun for them. So I'm a big believer in making things fun for kids, and to be honest, for the team I coach now.
Well, certainly winning helps do that, and you know, you won at every level, and so you
go to Chris. Let's be honest. Winning is, if we're going to be perfectly honest, winning's everything.
No, it's believe me. You know, here's what I saw last year. When I saw what the Boston Bruins were doing during the regular season, all I could think of when I was playing the game, when we were on winning streaks, how fun it was. And you've been part of that, Christ, your whole career, really. And well, I guess you go to Green Bay, you win the championship there. What happens there? Like, you get coach of the year, almost everywhere you've been, you got coach of the year. So how does Julian Brisebois, does he say, does he come to you, or are you going to throw your resume out after?
This is what happened. As I told you earlier, after Tim left Green Bay and crushed the program, I came in to build it back up. So we won the Clark Cup, and as I said, got the new deal. And honestly, I love the organization. Timmy will tell you, like, although you never got to play in the Rush Center.
No, we were the Brown County.
We would have one game a year there, which was, but yeah, that was a treat, that arena. We're playing in a brand new arena right beside Lambeau. The people from Green Bay were, oh man, the Wisconsin people, I loved them. They were just such good people. And so my wife and I are pretty simple people, and we're like, we're staying here. It's August. And I remember it was like August 5th or 6th. And so here's my interactions. What comes around goes around in a weird way. So Wade Arnott, who works for Newport, because I was kind of had a little relationship with those guys, and then I was having success at the youth levels, Jeff Vinnick buys Tampa, hires Steve Eiserman, who then hires Guy Boucher, who then he hires Julian Brisebois, and now it's mid-August. Where are you going to find a quality coach in mid-August? We can laugh about it now, but I was just the guy that was in junior hockey available because everybody else had a job. And that's truly, I think that's how, whether you want to call it fate, whatever you want to call it in that, timing is everything. And I remember I wasn't going to go on the interview because I was like, I'm just going to stay in Green Bay. Like, I can't. But then I thought, I remember Wade, because Wade was doing contract negotiation with Julian, and he brought my name up. And I don't think Julian knew, I mean, he'll probably kill me for this, but I don't think he knew who the Green Bay Gamblers were at the time.
No.
And he, to Julian's credit, he called me. And I was, they, you know, the guys are like, well, you can't burn a bridge. Like, you might go pro hockey one day. And I was like, I don't even have a, I'm not going to pro. Like, I thought I was going to go be a college coach somewhere potentially. And
see, a lot of people don't know this.
I know. Yeah,
I went on the, I went on the interview, and I remember I interviewed with Iserman and Julian, and it was like 2.5 hours. And I, you know, you kind of
were you nervous at all, intimidated going in there?
I think one of the biggest things that helped me, it was two things. Yes, when I first saw Steve Iserman, I did have that oh shit moment, like, oh my god, there's this is Steve Iserman. But I didn't need the job. And I went into the job. I went into the interview thinking,
If I get it, I get it.
I didn't need it. And I, whether that helped me out or not, it, maybe I was a little more relaxed in it. Who knows? But I had it. I interviewed well. And I just don't know what other candidates they had. Like, they was like, well, we got to interview these other people. For all I knew, they didn't have anybody else.
Yeah.
And so, but they were great. And like 3 days later, he called me and I thought, oh my, because my wife had said to me, how'd it go? And I was like, ah, well, it's pro hockey. Like, they don't even know who I am. I'm not getting a job. But I knew I made it hard on him. I was like, I probably made it hard on him. And sure enough, he offered me the job. And 2 days later, I took it.
Wow, they look like geniuses, these guys. Now they look like geniuses. Right? Or was it
they
just
found
fate?
You. They
it
found
had to be
you.
Fate.
Yeah.
It had to be fate. I look at the record, and again, God, it's so impressive. It is like 4 Stanley Cup finals, 2 Stanley Cups. Yeah, you're blessed with a talented team, good management. That first Stanley Cup in 2014-15 against Chicago, you got there. Were you surprised you got there so quick? Or
okay. So there's a couple of things. So first of all, I can't skip over the teams
jump.
In the North American League, the Green Bay.
Yeah,
but I can't skip over Norfolk.
Okay.
Because that team, if you could take the prototypical blueprint of speed, skill, toughness, that was it. We won 28 straight games to finish the year that year.
That was 2011-2012.
Was that fun? Was that fun to win 20?
I've never been a part of anything like that before. And that's at the North, that's the American Hockey League.
Yeah.
And we would be pulling guys up from the East Coast League that were just, you know, I made a poster at the end of the year with every player that played during that streak. And there's guys that played 1 game, 2 games, never, you know, saw again, but they were part of that streak. And that's like, you talk about building a culture. That team really was the building block for me to go to the NHL. And there were many players on that team I took with me because of, I knew what they could do and culture and like guys that never thought they'd even get a shot. Like you talk about JP Cote, he's actually the guy that hit Jeffrey on. And I don't even bring that one out because that was, you just felt awful for the kid and just that whole circumstance. But he was in the East Coast League in Ontario when we called him midway through the year.
Yeah.
And a year and a half later, he was thinking of retiring. And a year and a half later, he's got a Calder Cup and he was playing in the NHL. And that's how just the culture guys came in. And you know, I look at some of these guys, PC Labrie, Eric Nielsen.
That guy can bring a team together.
Neely.
We were loaded with them.
And then you mix in, you know, Tyler Johnson, Andrzej Palat, Radko Gudas, Richard Panik, Corey Conacher. You just start ripping through the young guys. And we just had that perfect blend. And nobody would touch our young guys because we had so much toughness. And so that team, we go on to win the Calder Cup, and that culture, I brought a lot of those players with me. So to answer your question, we go from we kind of turned the team over. And I think we were a big reason the game changed, because the game was still kind of, you know, a little more hooking, holding way. And we turned it into a speed game. I'm not saying we invented it. We just, those are the players we had. So we had to, we rolled with it. And I think that surprised some people. We went and then we, the year we made the playoffs and then we got swept by Montreal. That was a really, it was a good learning experience for me. But then that trade we made for Ben Bishop. And if you remember, when we got swept by Montreal, he got hurt.
Yeah.
Like 6 games before the end of the season, he broke his elbow, I think. And it, that was tough for us, because he was a big reason we were where we were. And I think that was one of the, probably the trades, benchmark trades for me early in my career that really helped stabilize things. And then, you know, make that run to the playoffs in 2015. You know, people don't, probably don't even remember, but we were down 3-2. Actually, we were down 2-1 in Detroit and down 2-0 in game 4, and didn't have, I bet we had 15 shots on goal. And basically Tyler Johnson took the game over. He scored with about 5 minutes left, set up the tire with 2 minutes left, and then set up the overtime goal, or scored the overtime goal. And so now it's 2-2. We lose to go down 3-2. Now we're going to, you know, we go into Detroit, somehow win it to make it 3-3, come home, win it in game 7. Like, that's how close we were to out. And then as soon as we did that, we took off. And it was a special year to go to play Chicago. And that series taught me a ton, because I thought, like, the John Cooper today might have given the team a better chance to win than the John Cooper 2015.
Get closer to the action in the Fight Club with the Raw Knuckles podcast over on Patreon. Whether you're an instigator, enforcer, or aiming for the Hall of Fame, there's something for everyone waiting for you. Don't miss your chance to be part of the ultimate hockey community.
Yeah, so next year you go to conference finals. So you were first in the Atlantic. Great record, 113 points. Next year, 62 wins. Who did it before that? Scotty Bowman. And you want to,
I'll give you a story I probably haven't told anybody.
Go right ahead.
So
I'll take it.
We set the record, or tie the record for most wins in the regular season, which Boston just beat this past year.
Yeah.
And Scotty Bowman comes to a bunch of our games, like almost all of our games down here in Tampa. And so I see him quite often. So I call him down. He rarely comes. He doesn't come into the coach's room or locker room or anything. He just comes, watches games. So when we got back, I had a puck, because we won the game in Boston, was that the puck I had for the 62 wins.
Yeah.
And brought Scotty down to the room. And I had our PR guys like, will you take a picture with Scotty Bowman and I with this puck? And Scotty was like the man, and he's like, no problem. And so it's just the two of us with the puck, the only two coaches to ever win 62 games. So NBC's covering, and they knew the picture was taken, but I was like, nobody's getting the picture. And they're like, well, can you give us that picture? We're about to play Columbus. And I remember thinking like, well, I guess it'd be pretty cool. But I'm like, no, it's just a moment Scotty and I had between two coaches, and I don't want it out there and stuff like that. So I never did it. And thank goodness, because I didn't expect that we were going to have a 6-day playoff and be out.
Man. And I'm going to tell you, I remember watching that series, and I mean, shocked, like everybody was shocked, but here's the deal. Not easy. When I was in playing those seasons, it's such a long season. How, as a coach, have you learned to get a team to peak at a certain time, or can you do that?
I do. It depends on your team. I truly believe that. I think if you've got a veteran team,
because that's hard to do, like get them to peak at.
If you have guys that have won before, they know what point totals they need to get in. They know, they're fully aware. Even last year, I know we lost in the first round, but we weren't playing unreal hockey going into the playoffs. And we were just playing. We just knew what we needed to do to get in. There was rest involved. And then we came and, to be honest, I thought we had a really good playoff. We just, it wasn't our time. But it's, you know, you won't go into that playoff, sit here and say Toronto outplayed us. Toronto yeah. beat us, but they didn't yeah. outplay us. And so we had a, it's different like that, but there's times you got to learn as a team and an organization. And I know, you know, that year in 2019, you know, I think Vasi won the Vezina and Cooch won the Hart, and we won a lot of awards. And when Jack Adams came up, I was still sitting in my seat. I didn't get called up there, yeah. but it was a tough time, because I remember I had to sit behind Nick Foligno, and he played for Columbus, and Foligno was up for an award. And what a genuine, super nice guy he is. And, yeah. and honestly, I had to make fun of ourselves a bit, because it was just tough, because I think he felt uncomfortable sitting in front of me. And I was like, Nicky, don't worry, man. Like, it's okay. It's like the comedians. I remember the Saturday Night Live comedian was up there, and he was, you know, he was ripping on us. And it was tough. It was tough to sit in there. But, you know, sure enough, I'd show that footage to our guys and say, hey, you know, we had to sit through this. And we created, I guess, our own problem by winning that many games and going out. But let's show the world that we can do this. And, you know, that gets me to my – I know I'm rambling on here.
No, that's fine.
No, you're good.
Well, you know, when we got swept, that's when the University of Virginia basketball team – I don't know if you remember, but they were the number one seed.
Number one seed, and they lost, right,
to 16? They were the first ever one seed to lose to a 16. And so our neighbor across the street, Jan, she brought me over a Virginia hat. Like, she didn't know what to do. So like 3 days later, she brought that over, and she's like, maybe you can use this as inspiration or motivation for next year. And I was like, oh, that's, you know, at the time she gives it to me, and I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, you're like, here's a hat from another losing team.
Yeah, and I'm like, ugh. And, but, you know, Virginia went on to win the national championship the next year. And I was like, I sat there and I went over and saw Jan. I said, Jan, it's the sweetest, like, this is an unreal gift. I'm going to use this. And I carried it with me to every single game all year, showed it to all the players, told them what it meant. Uh-huh. And we made our run of the Stanley Cup and then ended up winning. And I remember Scott Van Pelt, so we win the cup and we're going live on ESPN on that. And Scott Van Pelt's going to interview me. And I left the interview real quick before I went on, and I ran and got the Syracuse hat or the Virginia hat, and I put it on my head and I wore it in the interview. And now Bennett, who's the head coach in Virginia, I took a picture of the Stanley Cup, never met him before, and sent him a picture, and he sent me one back with a Lightning hat on and the Division I National Basketball Trophy. It was pretty cool.
Are you ready to take your love for hockey to the next level? Join the Fight Club Raw Knuckles exclusive Patreon to unlock amazing perks like ad-free episodes, bonus interviews, and even a chance to win a game day experience with me in the Habs Cave. Don't miss out on this ultimate hockey experience.
No, I got a question, Coop. When I was in Russia, I played, Mike Keenan was coaching there, and he traded for me. And the year that he traded for me, they won the previous year. So he was talking to me and he said, you know, to win 2 years in a row, you got to change, which was weird because he never won 2 years in a row. But at the time he told me, you got to change 25% of your team. And then they traded for me. We lost in the second round. His whole theory didn't work. But going on with that, do you believe, is that something, I mean, is that hold true? Do you believe in that? How did you win back to back? What was your whole method?
There wasn't a big changeover, right?
No.
Like
he said, he's got to change 25% of the team that won before to win again. Is what I'm saying. I mean, what's your thoughts?
My wife says we win because I have an understanding wife, a loyal dog, and one hell of a goalie.
Okay. All right.
But
that too.
Well, yeah. Do I believe that change is good? I do. 25%. I don't know. I don't know if I could put a percentage on it, but I do think, and it may not be personnel. It may be a tweak to your system. It might be how you, I don't know, maybe you've changed the times and how things are done. But I do believe that if you keep things the same, if you keep all the players the same, then familiarity, what does that breeds contempt? There might be a little bit of take the foot off the gas. So do I think tweaking is maybe a better word? 25% seems a little drastic to me, but I guess it depends what 25% you're changing. But I do believe that a little bit of change is, it's good.
This is also coming from the guy who told me this over the phone. And then the next day at practice, he goes, what position you play? That's what he said. So, no joke. I'm not making that up. I'm like, oh, okay. Mike Keenan.
Like, I've only met Mike once. It was actually the jersey I have behind me. I was very fortunate to coach Canada at the World Championships. And we lost in a shootout in the final.
2-1 to Sweden. Right.
And Victor Hedman scored the goal, not in the shootout, but he scored the lone goal for them. And Mike, he came. So we had it was the last night we were there. And so we went we're in Cologne, Germany. What a great place that was. We had so much fun anyway, where the establishment we were at. And Mike came out with us. He was, you only hear the stories about how he was as a coach, but that he was definitely not like that night.
He's different away from the rink. He's nice. Actually treats you like a human being.
Yeah, he was super nice, super nice guy. Yeah.
We've had Mike on, and we've had Jacques Lemaire came on with us. Jacques, we couldn't get off. He was on for like 2.5 hours, right, Tim? He was like, he never does this stuff, Jacques Lemaire, and he did.
Yeah.
And it was awesome talking to him. He was just really cool. Mike,
it's weird because like I don't know who to blame on this one because he said, "Hey, we'll just get you on for 15 minutes."
No, never, never.
That was four segments of 15
it's
minutes.
It's never ago. 15 minutes.
No, it's going to take you 15 minutes to get on. Is what
we meant. We're going to make that up.
Yeah. So.
But we have Mike on, and I said, Mike, everybody I talk to that played for you, they say Mike Keenan is a prick, and he sat there for a minute and he went, yeah, but I'm a nice prick. And Tim and I were like howling, laughing. And he was really good. Like he was personable and thoughtful, and he was cool on here. You talk about benching guys and benching those big players. And it's a calculated move, but how difficult is that when you pull the trigger as a coach? You're going to do something for the first time. Because, a lot of coaches, they come in, when you come in a situation, you got to get certain guys, you need your guys in the room, right? You need those core guys. You got to earn that, but you need those guys in the room when teams are going through difficult times and guys want to point at the coach. You need the players to protect you, those big guys.
As I told you earlier, it's not my style to embarrass guys. I wouldn't want that to happen to myself. So I don't like doing it to guys. I think everything can be dealt in house, but there are times that like in the end, when you have to get your point across and you don't feel anything else is working, the one thing that can usually get the point across is ice time. And if you take some of it away, usually that can jolt somebody back, in the direction that they need to go. And like I said, all guys are different. There's players I've coached that need a kick in the ass. And there's guys I've coached that need an arm put around them. And it just, you got to navigate your way through that. What makes players tick? And there's guys that sometimes you got to take their ice away and they respond for you. Unfortunately, in the limited situations I've done it, the guys have really responded.
Nux, you were an arm around the guy type player.
Coach? Yeah.
No, like the coach had to put an arm around you.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
speaking of coaches, did you see Marty?
So John wants to go golf or go fish or something.
We got part two of this. Hold on. No. We got part two tomorrow. So, no,
all right. Hold on. So before I go here.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a couple things I have for you. So Tim, you caught me off guard. So I didn't, but there's a couple questions, although we did cover a little bit of Green Bay.
Okay.
The brawl in the hall.
Oof. You're going to have a t-shirt. I'll get you one.
That's definitely okay. He's not talking to me. That's for sure. Yeah, that's for sure.
So it was it 86 or whatever. So you scrapped or something with, was it Jay Miller or somebody? But I guess my point being, they escort him off the ice. But I didn't realize in the Boston Garden, did the players enter at the same?
We went by the Bruins bench to get to our locker room. They went to the where the Zamboni comes out to get to theirs. So what happened, I had someone had Chelly, but Miller was on Chelly, a couple guys. And then I had, I forget the kid's name, the defenseman. He come in and grabbed me. I mean, let me go. You got to let me go because my guy's not. He's I can't. I said, let me go. I'm like, what am I going to pull out a match and burn his hand? And so he wouldn't let go. And I hauled off and if I ever hit him, I think I would have broke his jaw and I just grazed him, but he went down and then I got away from him. When Miller saw me do that, he started going nuts. And then I was going, they were taking me off and Linsman stood up and I'm there. That's the last thing I'm going to do is wait for Ken to poke me in the eye with a stick. So I threw a punch and it was nuts.
I couldn't believe that. Was it Kerry Collins? Is he? I couldn't believe that
Frazier.
Took you on the bench by the Bruins. Like, well, no wonder a brawl started.
That's how we had to go off. You don't know how many pieces of pizza, how many beers, how much shit I got thrown at me going off the ice. And, you know, they
finally. And you're a Boston guy.
Yeah, they hated me. They hated me. But that's okay. Most of those, a lot of them people are from out of town, they're not real city people. So, funny stuff.
All right, okay, I got a couple more. So this one, I come out of pocket, then
we gotta go. Cool.
I gotta go. All right. So who's the toughest guy you ever fought?
God, I never answer that question.
All right, don't answer it.
No, they
don't
answer the question. All of them. Listen.
Okay, so don't answer the question.
What I'll say? No. All of those.
Your most entertaining fight? Where you're like, oh my God, YouTube this one. This is a free for all.
A good one with Jay Miller. Really toe-to-toe at the Blue Line in Boston. It was a real good
one. You just had one at the grocery store like a month ago. You fought this guy at the produce section, you were telling me, or something.
That was in Hawaii.
Is this where you cracked the grocery stick, Joe?
Yeah.
So, but all them guys were tough. You know, Brownie.
Yeah, wow, they're all.
Every guy who does that job, you know, like everyone who does that job is tough. I never classified them. Be honest with you, I didn't. You know, I knew if a guy's a lefty or righty.
So Chaser always jokes because Kelly Chase is a good friend of mine.
Yeah, I love Chaser.
Yeah, Chase is the best. But he goes, I was like, God, you're tough. He goes, I might be, but they were still in the playing days. There was the race for Chase because when you have Tony Twist on your team, they're coming after me way before they're going out. It was the race for Chase. I always laugh.
He wasn't sick. He was just soft as a snake full of it, you know? But, you know, rather large human being.
So the most famous Canada Cup, probably 87 Canada.
Yeah, yeah.
True or false, you were a member of Team USA?
True.
True.
3 points.
Tell him about the fight at lunch. Tell him about the fight at lunch. He was fighting at lunch.
A little known fact.
3 points.
My other favorite one is how somebody possibly. So I always look when I, you know, recruited players in junior, I always would look at their penalty minutes the year before and see if there was an odd number. So if there was an odd number, I would say, okay, this guy's getting... We can give him an invite camp.
Get into the action with Fight Club, Raw Knuckles' new exclusive Patreon. From ad-free episodes to uncensored content and discounts on merch, there's something for every hockey fan. Join the Fight Club today.
Is it true you had 10 penalties in one game?
Yep. In Boston. It was one of them fuck you games. Last game of the season, Boston, Hartford.
I was going to have my kid listen to this podcast till just now.
But he already had 20. He had 20 goals, though.
It was one of those screw you games. It was one of those screw you games. And we were playing in the playoffs. And the stuff I did in that game is crazy. I had I elbowed Bobby Holik in the nose, broke his nose. He was coming up the boards. I was jumping on the ice. Boom. I pulled Rob Ray's. No. Who's the little guy? Rob. Played Brown. With Pittsburgh. Rob Brown. I yeah. pulled his plugs out. He had plugs. And I pulled his actually pulled his plugs out of his head. Yeah, I kind of lost it that night, but yeah. 10 penalties, one
That's
game.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
6 minors, 2 majors, a 10-minute misconduct, and a game yeah. misconduct.
Yeah. Try doing a podcast with him.
I see that's why you're in different rooms.
That's, yeah. Yeah.
That's like, I see cities.
Different. Well, we'd love to be in the same room, but yeah. financially, we can't do it.
All right, last one.
All right.
Since you're interviewing a coach, how was it being a coach?
When I coached, I loved it.
You got to tell the
I loved it.
The game sheet when you're like, that's an amazing story.
Yeah,
you got to tell. But, you got to tell it.
When I coached with Lemire, I went the year after Stanley Cup, and I took Larry Robinson's place. Scott Stevens hated me because we fought and didn't like me. Danico didn't like me, and they just bucked everything. And certainly some of those guys let Lemire down. And I also looked at, and believe me, I'll take my part in it. My personality is not one of an assistant coach, and it just didn't work. So they thought they had 2 head coaches, and I get it. But I went and became a head coach in the East Coast Hockey League. And I was there for 2 years. I got coach of the year my first year and made the playoffs on an expansion team 2 years. And then the team moved to Jackson, Mississippi, and I didn't go.
That was in what arena did you play out of?
Showplace Arena in right around D.C. area, yeah, Washington, yeah, yeah. Maryland.
Can I tell your story? Can I tell it?
Go right. Go ahead.
So who was the coach? Scott Gordon?
Scott Gordon, yeah.
Yeah, and he was saying something to your players, and then they got into it, him and Scott Gordon. He refused to walk by the bench, and they played him back-to-back, and I guess the next day when Nux was putting the starting lineup in, he did it first, and he put on there, he's like, I'm going to fucking kill you, to Scott Gordon. And then he's like, you're nuts, dude.
No, I didn't write it on there. When he came by my bench, because John Cooper, what I never did – is yelled at other players. I hate when coaches yell at other players. It's the worst thing. It happened to me when I was a player, and I hated it. And when I was a coach, I said, I'll never do that. And Gordon was screaming stuff at my players. And he came by my bench. He ended up, you know how you walk right on the wall? He walked out by the face-off dot. He was coming around the thing, and he got to the blue line. He said, I better go out.
He's a smart guy. He's a smart guy.
Me too. Yeah, I don't blame him.
He's 100%. I would have fucking.
Listen, John Cooper. Listen, I'm going to tell you, and I mean, I've always had respect for you as a coach and a person from afar. I've never got to meet you. I met you. We talked on the phone a couple of times. I never met you in person. And I've always had that respect for you. I love what you've done in this game. One day, and I believe this, you're going to get into the Hockey Hall of Fame, and we can forget about Coach of the Year then, because there's no question. What you've done is just, it's incredible. It's incredible. And I really mean that. I love what you've done, and I hope you continue doing it for years to come. And you just, I didn't ask you about the fishing, your fishing tournament. I love it. Raised tons of money, right? You love fishing?
Yeah. Coops Catch for Kids.
Yeah, right.
That's my little baby.
That's another thing. That's awesome. Giving back.
Yeah. March 3rd. I got to thank all our players, because they jump on boats for me, and we put the players in boats, and people buy the boats, and all the money goes to pediatric cancer. It's a fun day on the water. So I got some headliners coming in, so you have to come in for that.
Fish a lot?
I'd love to.
A lot down?
I try to. A lot of inland fishing. Yeah. It's hard to get out all the time, but I love it. My kids love it. So we try to sneak out.
Do you fly fish?
Yeah, but not here. Fly fish when we go to this summer up in Idaho. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, before we go though,
yeah,
I'd be remiss if we do not talk briefly about our good buddy Jimmy Vesey.
Yeah. Oh, geez.
he's the best. So the live when we went into Boston.
I love him. I love him. He is my best friend. I love him to death.
It was Jimmy, myself, and another podcaster that I will not mention since they're a podcast, but a phenomenal guy. And they showed me around Boston, and then we ended up at
the Spud, Knights of Columbus. Yeah,
Knights of Columbus. That's where we finished the night, and oh man, did we have fun! But nobody better than Jimmy.
That's a dangerous neighborhood back in the day, boy. Drinking in barrooms.
The stories that are going on.
We had them on. We had them on, Coop, and they talked about like robbing banks. It was like nothing to do with hockey.
I felt like that movie, The Town.
Yeah.
Like probably.
I know. I thought that was like a Dateline NBC episode or something.
It was like autobiography or something.
Anyway, everything I said, I mean from the bottom of my heart, you're a good man. I appreciate you coming on, and I wish you well this season, and hopefully you get back to where you want to be.
I appreciate it, guys. That was a lot of fun.
Thanks, you've got Coop. I got Tampa winning the cup. I got him winning the cup. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Raw Knuckles podcast. Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe.